This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, episode 98. Are nursing homes liable for infections in residents? The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. And welcome to this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm William Smith.
Thank you for joining us. A lot of our lawsuits that we file, they're, you know, generally the mechanism of injury is going to be a broken bone from a fall or a bed sore because someone wasn't turned on a regular regimen, or maybe someone has some kind of head trauma, something along those lines. But what's often an overlooked source of claims against nursing homes are infections that start in that nursing home that could have been prevented. And that's basically what we're going to be talking about on this episode of the podcast.
Yeah. And what you need to remember are two things. One, that nursing homes, and I know that I've said this before, because it's something that I am, I feel very strongly about, that nursing homes and hospitals, by their very nature, are dirty places. So when you take your kids up there to see grandma, or you take your kid to see somebody in a hospital, you know, I've seen too many people letting their kids play on the floor. This isn't your living room. This is a place where bodily fluids and people with infections live, where bodily fluids are all over the floor at any given time. And this is a place where the residents typically are older citizens and therefore have weakened immune systems. So nursing homes are very dangerous places for infections.
Yeah. And so just right out of the gate, with regard to certain types of infections, the nursing home itself and the nursing home staff has a duty under the federal and state law to follow orders from the physicians that prescribe treatments to the residents. So many of our cases, particularly the bed sore cases, you're going to find that the physician will say, you know, the wound needs to be cleansed with a particular type of wound cleanser. It needs to be packed with some type of gauze, or the dressing needs to be replaced as needed, or if soiled, these type of things will be written into an order. And the staff at the nursing home has a duty, an obligation to fulfill those physicians' orders. And, you know, aside from just getting the wound better, part of the reason why you have a physician's orders with regard to these type of with wounds like bed sores or just maybe surgical incisions, these type of things, is to prevent them from getting infected. Mm-hmm. And I guess, long story short, what I'm saying is that in terms of being liable for an infection in a nursing home, that is one of the avenues in which a facility might be liable, is if the physician's order is clear and appropriate, but for whatever reason, the nurses or the CNAs or whoever it is do not implement those physician's orders. And as a result, the wound stays dirty and an infection results. That is one way in which the facility would be liable.
In addition to the requirement that they follow physician's orders, all healthcare workers, if you're in a nursing home, you're in a hospital, you're in a hospice situation, any healthcare worker has to follow universal precautions. And universal precautions are the approach that we use in healthcare that treat all bodily fluids and all blood as having bloodborne pathogens like HIV or something similar. So in other words, there's an old saying for gun safety: you treat every gun as if it were loaded. The same thing in healthcare: you treat every bodily fluid, all blood, every every patient as though they had an infection. And the reason that you do that is to protect them, to protect you, and to protect other patients. So you have to wear gloves. Whenever you're taking care of somebody, you've got to wear gloves. If you're checking out a wound, you got to wear gloves. You have to wash your hands before. You have to wash your hands after. There's other certain things that you have to do that have to do with if you're ever in somebody's hospital room, you'll see a red container on the wall that's called a Sharps container. So whenever you stick somebody with a needle, even if it's just a pinprick for a diabetic test, it has to go in the Sharps container. You have to wear certain other protective clothing depending on the procedure that you're doing. But those basic universal precautions where you're treating everybody as though they were infected with a bloodborne pathogen to prevent the spread of infection, because you don't know. You absolutely don't know.
That's right. And as an offshoot of that, every facility under federal and state regulations is required to keep the facility clean, essentially. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we see oftentimes when we intake a new client, we'll go to the nursing home compare website for the, you know, most recent, you know, 2 or 3 years worth of surveys or inspections. Or we'll go get the information from the Freedom of Information Act, and we'll see that. And then, you know, some of these facilities, which are some of the worst places, will be cited for that. We'll be cited for, you know, dirty bathrooms. We're looking at a case a couple of days ago where, you know, soiled bedpans were left scattered around the room and in the bathroom. So in short, that is another way in which a nursing home can be liable if they're not following universal precautions, if they're not following doctor's orders, but if they're also, from a general standpoint, not keeping facilities in a clean and sanitized condition. So Will's often talked about, like, you know, in his days of working in nursing homes, you know, when you walk in there, does it smell bad? Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can be an indicator of they're not following the OBRA rules of keeping the facilities clean, which can in turn lead to infections. Another thing that that could make the nursing home on the hook for infections is the concept of ADLs, activities of daily living. Activities of daily living are the things that we do every day as humans. We attend to our personal hygiene. We bathe. We get dressed, shave, these type of things. And that doesn't stop just because you're a resident of a nursing home. So generally, residents will be categorized into a couple categories in terms of their need for assistance with those daily living activities. So the first one will be what level of dependence do they have? So are they totally dependent on every component of a particular activity? Or can Ms. Johnson feed herself once the food has been put in front of her? Or can Ms. Johnson, laying in bed, use the bedpan without any assistance, but maybe she can't get up to walk to the bathroom? What level of dependence does she need on these various daily activities? The second component is, to the extent that the resident needs help, how many people are required to provide that help? So maybe it's a one-person assist to help Ms. Johnson get out of bed. Maybe it's a two-person assist, depending on several other factors. But I guess the point that I'm driving at is, with regard to bathing and personal hygiene components, not necessarily just wound care or anything like that, but from a bathing standpoint and a personal hygiene standpoint, if a resident requires total dependence or at least some type of limited or even extensive or even limited assistance, and the nursing staff does not provide that assistance, then that's a possibility that they might be on the hook if a wound gets infected or an infection develops because of that. We have a case that we're working on right now for against a nursing home that's in southern Georgia, where an individual there had abrasions and wounds in the in between his toes.
Yeah,
and in between his toes, once he was discharged to go to the ER for pneumonia and UTI, it was discovered that there were maggots living in the wounds in between his toes. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they do some labs and cultures and come back that he has sepsis, and the sepsis was linked to the wound that had maggots in it. Mm. So we look back at the ADL log for the week prior, the week and a half prior, because I mean, the ADL log is going to, he was a extensive to total dependent on activities of daily living. So it wasn't like he was getting himself dressed, but we look back at the log for those time periods, mm-hmm. and you know, it's showing that he wasn't bathed for a week, and it's showing that he was not dressed. So they're not doing their jobs here. And you know,
and just to jump in real quick, this, if you've got a loved one in a nursing home, socks are something that you need to check out. Because what can happen is it's very easy for CNAs to get in a habit of giving somebody a bed bath for whatever reason. Let's say that somebody is ordered to be bed bath because they're not supposed to move, leave the bed. And then what happens is they fall into a pattern of just giving this person a bed bath because it's quicker and easier than getting them up sometimes, taking them all the way to the shower room and giving them a shower. Because what you have to remember is that some nursing homes, a lot of nursing homes, don't have what's called a shower team. So that CNA who is assigned to six or seven different people is not only responsible for getting them up and changing them and feeding them and laying them back down when it's time for them to take a nap, they're also responsible for during the day for giving a certain number of those patients showers. That's way too much work for one person. And so what will happen sometimes is they'll end up cutting corners. They shouldn't do that, but they do. And an easy way to do that is to forget to change somebody's socks. Because if it's out of sight, it's out of mind, and you end up not realizing what's going on below beneath those socks. So if you've got a resident that has socks on and you go up there, take their socks off. Look at their feet.
Yeah. And that's another, we're going into mediation in the next, I don't know, maybe a few weeks if we can get to before Christmas, but we're going into mediation on another case that was the same principle where mm-hmm. There was a massive wound on a foot that was undiscovered because the individual was wearing a boot heel and socks and they were never changed.
Yeah.
And so this wound became radically infected and ultimately cost the resident his life. So that's another way. Basically, so that's not following physician's orders, not following universal precautions, not keeping the facility clean as per federal regulations, and essentially not doing the hygiene bathing portions of your activities of daily living, depending on how dependent the resident is on it. But another way is just following the appropriate standard of care to wounds. And when I say wounds, there are all kinds of reasons why a resident of a nursing home is going to have a skin tear or an open part to their body. It could be from recovering from a surgery. Mm-hmm. It could be a diabetic ulcer, a bed sore, stasis ulcer, severe edema, an abrasion that could, you know, from dragging them across the bed, scabs, anything you can think of it's an open wound to the skin. There's lots of reasons for them, but not following the standard of care in treating that wound and causing that wound to heal effectively. So, one of the ways that in many of our cases, particularly our bed sore cases, is that once there is an opening to the body, like a stage one, stage two bed sore, that represents a significant change in condition to the resident, and they're required to alert both the family and a physician. So a physician can go and appraise the situation. So they might say, you know, we need to start a new protocol, a new intervention to prevent infection and treat this wound, whatever it may be. And so when the nursing staff at the facility doesn't do that and an infection occurs, then they could possibly be on the hook for that infection. In terms of proving these cases, like, it's one thing, I guess what I'm trying to emphasize is there's a difference between should the nursing staff have prevented whatever the wound is. That's the first question. It's a threshold question, right? Are they responsible for the wound itself? So that has its own measure, has its own burden of proof to prove, mm-hmm. and its own measure of damages. But we'll set that aside. Then the issue is if an infection occurred, did the nursing staff at the facility do or not do something they should have done to prevent that infection? And that's you know, the basis of a claim that you can make against the facility. And for the reasons that we've set forth, you know, earlier in this episode, because the nursing staff, in order to be liable for an infection, they have to have done or not done something to have caused that infection. And then the next component to that, to a claim like that.
Well, I mean, it's also extremely important. And this is something I think that we're going to be talking about in an upcoming episode. Whether or not they're liable. Also, what has it done to the resident? So if it's a UTI that turned into urosepsis that killed them, you're probably going to want to make a claim and try to prove them liable. If they end up getting an infection that leads to pneumonia that is treated and they're fine afterwards.
That's right.
I mean, you know, you might have a case for medical bills, but you're probably not going to find an attorney to pursue that.
That's right. So, and again, I've been focusing on like bodily wounds like that, but you're right. I mean, like, infections can occur from, you know, a dirty catheter.
Well, an infection can easily occur for somebody who has dysphagia. They're not able to swallow well. They're supposed to be on thickened liquids. They are on thin liquids. Somebody messes up. They, you know, suck it down the wrong pipe. They get aspiration pneumonia because of an infection in their lungs because of a foreign object, and that can kill you.
Right. And so I guess where I was going with that is that, you know, in order to show that the nursing home is liable for the infection, you're going to have lab results, and you would connect, you know, based on the lab results, the infection and the wound, or the infection where it originated from, and you connect the dots that way with expert testimony.
And Rob has pointed this out, but it's really important that you understand that just because somebody gets an infection, and because I get this call a lot, somebody will say, my mom ended up getting MRSA, which is a multi-strain resistant staphylococcal bacteria. It's just a particular bacteria, because understand, antibiotics kill bacteria. They're not for viruses. And bacteria, according to evolution, have an ability to evolve given the difficulties of their environment. And so one of the difficulties that bacteria face are this onslaught of antibiotics. And so they have evolved to be resistant to all the bacteria that we have. Can they be liable if your mom develops this multiple resistant bacteria? Again, did they breach the standard of care? Did they fail, like Rob said, to follow doctor's orders? Did they fail to follow universal precautions? Because at the end of the day, you know, your 90-year-old mother has a decreased immune system, and a decreased ability to fight off disease, because your skin is your first line of defense, and as you get older, your skin, which is an organ, starts to break down. in addition to that, your immune system's breaking down. So it isn't just, you know, that your mother got sick or she got an infection. Are they liable? Have they somehow failed to do something that caused her to get the infection?
That's right. And again, with these type of cases, the nursing home is going to have their own line of doctors and experts say, you know, this infection came from some other thing. Or even if they did what you said, they would have gotten it. Even if they did everything they're supposed to, they would have gotten it anyway. These cases are a little bit, in our experience, a little bit more difficult than, say, an average, you know, trauma to the head from falling down. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much, I guess, science, for lack of a better word, so much science behind it. We saw an article from a couple months ago that kind of highlights this point. But it's out of, what do we got here? It's out of Charleston, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Kanawha County.
But this is a lawsuit filed in Kanawha County against Dunbar Nursing Home. Dunbar Nursing Home.
Which is owned, I think, by Genesis Healthcare, which also owns several facilities in Georgia. It's one of the big healthcare companies that owns lots of nursing homes.
Right. So she had a surgical wound when she was admitted, and there's the complaint says that the nursing home failed to provide the quality care, and she suffered.
So what happened was she had a. I can tell you by the way that this is written, it sounds like she had a knee surgery or a hip surgery, mm-hmm. and that she had surgical wound dehiscence, which is and hardware exposure. So in other words, the surgical wound came open. Something happened. I've had that happen to me before. Stitches were broken, or I've had residents who had stitches and they fell and the stitches came open. So it's opened back up, and either the hardware, like an artificial knee or an artificial hip, was exposed, which, like I just said, your skin is your first line of defense from infections. So her skin has been compromised. Her insides have been exposed, and then she gets a wound. And they also failed to treat her for infection.
Yeah, so the wound got infected, and that's the first part, is that she's having to be treated for this infection. She had to actually go through another surgery to correct the damage that was done. This is out of New York. This is a SOTUS nursing home and rehabilitation center. Then this is just a case that was covered by the local news over there. And I'll show you the video. It can be pretty graphic, but a woman had a wound on her leg that became so infected that she with MRSA that she nearly had kidney failure. And there was a ton of fluid in her legs, and it smelled really bad. And the nursing home didn't do anything about it. And it was actually the dialysis center. She was getting dialysis that alerted the state authorities to it. But it's resulted from allegedly just soiled gauze that remained in a leg wound. We're not following any protocol, but they specifically didn't follow the doctor's orders in terms of cleaning the wound. And they found just soiled gauze inside of it, and that you can see from the video that how it was just horrific.
Yeah.
And this also echoes a couple of cases that we filed earlier this year that are almost the same, except these were from bed sores, where the nursing staff, there's a stage 3 or stage 4 bed sore that develops, and they don't clean the wound. And in our instance, the wound was filled with just soiled gauze, because this was a bed sore of the sacrum. So it was obviously soiled with feces, and sepsis developed, and in one instance nearly killed our client. In the other instance did kill our client. So infection from these wounds it can be very dangerous. And that's all we're talking about it today. As we always say, you want to stay vigilant. The warning signs of infection that you could observe without being a medical professional include, you know, if higher heightened breathing, like faster breathing,
An actual wound.
Yeah, the actual wound.
That seems pretty obvious, but it's something that you can overlook. That's why I was saying take people's socks off.
Yeah.
Look at your loved one's body. Do they have wounds? Does it look like they have an infection? Smell.
Smell.
If you walk in there, I mean, you know, it's just a fact of life. We're humans. We have bodies and we release fluids that, you know, occasionally your loved one may go to the bathroom and it's not changed immediately. It's not going to be. It's impossible. And you may smell like feces.
Yeah.
But if it consistently smells in their room, then there's a potential that somebody has an infection in that room.
Or a lot of discharge.
Yeah.
Can be a sign of infection.
Yeah. Altered mental status.
I was going to say, that's one of the main ones. If there's an altered mental status, we need to get on the horn to somebody, let somebody know. Because you're getting more and more, your body's being more and more affected. They might be shutting down.
Yeah, because it may not be a wound-induced infection. It may be something that the infection is internal because of a UTI or
something like that. Well, I think that's about it for this episode. Let's see. Ooh, next week will be our last episode of the year.
It will be the 99th episode.
Yeah.
So we're not sure what we're going to do for our celebratory 100th episode.
And there'll be the first
coming up
of the year.
2019.
Yeah. This is interesting. I can't believe it's been this long. But anyway,
99 episodes.
Yeah. We encourage you to go 1 through 98. Mm-hmm. Go backwards.
And
catch up. Yeah, binge.
Over the holidays. Yeah. Binge. Yeah. Binge watch all 98 of these podcasts over the holidays.
Yeah. But new episodes are available every Monday on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or on YouTube or on our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.